Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. Virginia Commonwealth University published an article in the Journal of the American Medical Association that suggested vitamin C may be beneficial for people with sepsis. Research examined the effects of vitamin C on organ failure, a common complication of sepsis, which is an extremely toxic situation that often leads to death. They found that it lowered death rates among patients with sepsis and reduced how long they stayed in the hospital. So that's very important. Vitamin C offers promising treatment for sepsis. In fact, these patients were given either vitamin C or placebo intravenous every 6 hours for 4 days. After 28 days, the researchers found that the placebo group had a 46% death rate, while the vitamin C group was only 30%. That's a huge difference. Now, mind you, I do not consider this a high-dose vitamin C. I would be offering the people I work with far more than that orally every day. I would have tripled the amount of vitamin C, and I bet we would come up with hugely different results. But it's still a good study because it shows that orthodox medicine is looking at what we in the alternative field have found for a long time. Also, the National Institutes of General Medical Sciences found sepsis is one of the leading causes of death in the country. 300,000 deaths from sepsis reported each year. It's a life-threatening condition caused by the body's response to an infection, which may progress into septic shock. When that happens, blood pressure drops drastically, potentially leading to death. Now, although a treatment for sepsis exists, some patients are not able to survive from the disease, and hospital costs are extremely high. Sepsis accounted for $24 billion of the country's total hospital costs in 2013. So just one more way of looking at it. And also, I think that that sepsis should be incorporated into all, vitamin C should be included in all septic treatment. I'm not alone in that. A lot of other people are thinking the same thing. We have a lot more on health coming at you. We also have some very interesting video audio clips today. Now, you can watch the video clips by going to prn.fm. Scroll down, you'll see it in real time. However, for most people, it'll just be the audio. Here's the overarching question, and I'm going to ask if you find insight from any of the three different, and there are three completely different people, all with expertise in the field, talking about an issue that we're all faced with today, all of us, no matter what gated community you may live in, retired, down in the sanctuary state of Florida, and one of the, 1,000 people living in their homes on a golf course. It's sunny every day, nice people, great weather, and you can relax and enjoy the rest of your life. But this impacts everyone everywhere, and that is in the last 5 years, we have had a cultural eclipse, and only a tiny percentage of the population, under 1%, have participated in it. However, because of the political connotations, they have caused rules, regulations, laws to be passed to exemplify their ideology above and beyond everyone else's. I'll hold my thoughts. It's about the woke generation and all their new rules and regulations, how everything is about racism. You know, when someone didn't want to take math in college, they called it a racist class. And now word is everywhere. Math should not be taught. It's racist. And exams to get in, as we've historically had. And now those are racist. So now universities everywhere, over 1,000 universities and colleges, no longer require any entrance examinations, no qualifications to get in. Well, what will that lead to? Now we have classes where it's no longer a place to contemplate the way we think and how we think and to hone our critical life skills and ask the hard questions in debate and discussion and dialogue. But instead, it's a safe place to be with safe rooms and teddy bears and a whole legion of bureaucrats who are there to make sure that this is a safe space. So what happens is, with two energies not being able to share the same space at equal time with equal intensity, the dominant woke consciousness of microaggressions becomes dominant, and it absolutely creates a collapse of all of the other systems that had historically been there for over 1,000 years. And these people have some serious issues. If all the people in the world who need some critical thought, they do, and yet they want to go through college without having to take tests. So now even testing people to see what they've learned is no longer off the table. Classes can be done with no attendance. Textbooks can be racist, or it can be based upon a culture that inculcated the idea that you must study, which is racist. Everything today is racist. You know, if you don't like broccoli, it's racist. So, okay, then don't eat the broccoli. So how in the hell did we get to this place where we're absolutely gone insane? So that's what we're going to address. And I'd like you to share your input if you find what's being offered by some critical thinkers. And I mean, these are deep thinkers. So we're going to do some deep water swimming today. Hope you enjoy it. Now, also today, I'll be sharing an original in-depth investigative report, brand new article, and it's called The Unfounded Science Behind the COVID-19 Pandemic. I hope that you download it. I hope that you give it to everyone you know. I hope that you create small groups and get yourself a pro bono lawyer who's a social activist also and willing to fight, because we're giving you the science, the actual real science that we should all be using to give to our state, our local, and our national legislators, because clearly they are just uninformed, or they're fully informed, but they're completely compromised because they've been bought. The city councils, my God, what a cesspool of corruption. The state legislators, ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, over the last 45 years, have owned them. So the law that they passed is the bill that ALEC gave them and coached them on. You take this back to your legislature. We have got 16 other people going to work with you. So it's a bipartisan effort. So the image is, we, the legislators of this state, have deemed that gas hydrofracking should not be regulated. Look at Pennsylvania. What a septic place that is. And they did it. They succeeded. In North Dakota, they did it. They succeeded. And elsewhere in the United States. These are not by accident that are the rules and regulations that protect all of us in nature are being reversed, and special interest groups go to the fore. So everything you've been told about COVID-19, except the truth is, it is a virus. It is a genetically engineered virus, and in people who have comorbidities, it can be lethal. But for everyone else, it's not, with rare exception. So why do you completely control a whole citizenry of the world? There's where your agenda comes in. So that's what we're going to talk about today. A lot to talk about, all original material. So now you know that there's one more reason, outside of thinning the blood to prevent a stroke, to help your skin remain its collagen so it's tighter, longer, more pliable, more resilient to the impact of aging, less wrinkles, tighter skin, not that jowly, droopy look, that it helps your immune system, that it kills viruses, it helps stimulate the natural killer cell activity so you get a greater kill factor for the tumor markers that are being identifying cancer in your body, which we all have, and it kills the cancer. So a lot of reasons to take your vitamin C every day, throughout the day. Also from Ayn Shams University in Egypt comes a study about milk thistle, Sumerian. It's good against aluminum chloride-promoted Alzheimer's, meaning people who've had a lot of aluminum in their body, there's your vaccines, or deodorants, or cooking in aluminum foil, which people did during the 1950s, 60s TV dinners, come in that little aluminum foil. Well, all that creates a lot of aluminum in the body. And you also can get it in drinking water. And then that can lead to Alzheimer's, because it leads to inflammation in the brain. But now, what we're seeing is that there's a worldwide growing epidemic, pandemic, of neurodegenerative disease. And this shows that one, this is only one piece of a puzzle, by the way. It's not the end-all, cure-all, but it's one. Historically, milk thistle was used to help detoxify the liver. I would recommend it for people who had hepatitis and sclerosis, another, and even non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. But now we show that it works on the hippocampal tissue and it helps the body get rid of this aluminum. And that's important. And this was found by both biochemical, histological, and ultrastructural approaches. So just one more good thing. Also from Yonsei University College of Medicine, South Korea, comes a study about the anti-cancer effects of resveratrol. R-E-S-V-E-R-A-T-R-O-L, resveratrol. It helps with cell-mediated NK cell activity. So in just lay language, your natural killer cells are innate immune lymphocytes. They play a very important role in antiviral, anti-tumor immune responses. And several cancer immunotherapy approaches targeted the natural killer cells are currently in clinical and preclinical development. But here comes another study that shows that a food nutrient, resveratrol, can make a difference in stimulating the natural killer cell activity. So, in lay language, if you want to help prevent cancer, one single step among many that you should do is include resveratrol into your diet. Also, Harvard Medical School just published a study in the journal Gut showing that you have a lower risk of bowel cancer death if you have a higher omega-3 intake. So I would say 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams of the essential fatty acids each day can lower your risk of death from bowel cancer in patients diagnosed with the disease. That's very important. Of course, this is separate from what the omega-3 does for your arteries, your veins, your heart, and turning off inflammation. It's just one of the superstars of nutrients you should be taking on a daily basis. And from Boston University School of Medicine comes a study that vitamin D is associated with fewer complications among patients hospitalized with respiratory virus. Now, mind you, there are a lot of respiratory viruses. Right now, one is COVID. This was published in PLOS One, and it uncovered a lower risk of adverse clinical outcomes among hospitalized COVID-19 patients whose vitamin D levels were sufficient. Now, we know that COVID virus can cause severe respiratory symptoms, not just for the lungs, it also can impact the brain and the heart as well. Although many cases are asymptomatic or mild, the vast majority. But if you are a person who is at advanced age, if you have comorbidities, meaning let's say you have heart disease, diabetes, you're overweight, you have cancer, emphysema, then you're really at risk of dying from COVID. Which means that in every hospital, every assisted center, assisted living center, every hospice, every place where seniors are being helped at the end of their life, they should be getting vitamin C, vitamin D3, selenium, zinc. I would also add Padarco, P-A-R-D-A-R-C-U. I would use astragalus, very important, and olive leaf extract. These are all natural and non-toxic and extremely beneficial for respiratory viruses. So I just believe that we could lower the incidence of people going from COVID positive to COVID death. And finally, from Stony Brook University at SUNY, published in the Cellular Molecular Gastroenterology and Hepatology, a diet remains very important as a part of the disease management and prevention. This is what the study shows, and it shows that the more fructose that's in your soft drinks, the worse your intestinal inflammation, and hence more irritable bowel syndrome. So if you want to have healthier intestines, less inflammation, stay off the fructose. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 15 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from the break, we're going to go to a clip. Now, mind you, we have three clips today, and I'm going to do a little comment in between each clip, but then you have an opportunity to call in at our talkback number at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888, and ask your questions or make your comment. When we come back, we're going to hear from a person who is asking a question, Professor or Dr. Melanie Phillips. She is a brilliant person, lived her life as a traditional liberal, and then she started to see what the other liberals at the newspaper, one of the most respected in the world, The Guardian, were actually manifesting, in her opinion, some very anti-Semitic beliefs and remarks. And she challenged them and saw how rigid they were in their ideology. So they were supposed to be journalists of objectivity, but they were extremely ideologic. So now she's going to say this to everyone in the audience. And I'm imagining many people in this audience, not all by any means, but many of you believe that you're a good liberal. You're not a corporate Democrat liberal. You're not a Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Obama, Joe Biden liberal. You know, you're not a neoliberal liberal. You know, you're a pacifist liberal. You want all the things that historical liberalism represented. This will be a wake-up call for you. Right back at you with Melanie Phillips.
Associate with liberalism. Now, liberalism has a fundamental flaw. It is that it has two fundamental flaws. One is that because it prioritizes the individual, it has been interpreted over time in our current time to mean that you can't then establish any kind of hierarchy of values. You can't say that one set of values is mm-hmm. better than anyone else's, because mm-hmm. that's kind of being nasty to somebody else. And consequently, the logical flaw in that is that if you can't say that anyone's lifestyle or culture is better than anyone else's, then you can't say that liberalism is better than anyone else's. And consequently, you can't defend the fundamental liberal values of freedom of speech and tolerance of other points of view and freedom of religion and all those things which make a liberal, tolerant society. So that is one of the essential, I think, contradictions in liberalism. That means that it's sort of going down the plug. Plus the fact that it's become a libertarian ideology. That is to say, it's taken the notion of the dignity of the individual and respect for the individual, which in my view is at the heart of liberalism. But in my view, that can only be enshrined by, paradoxically, a body of laws and moral values that are regarded as kind of binding on you. But if you detach the individual from those laws, then you get a kind of free-for-all. And once you have a free-for-all, then it's everyone out for him or herself, and then you have the strong dominating the weak, and then you get to a situation very fast, which is where we've got to, where you don't have a liberal society, you have a tremendously illiberal society. And that's made even worse by the fact that this kind of liberalism, or I would call it libertarianism, mm-hmm. is actually an ideology. Now, what's an ideology? An ideology is where the power of the idea must trounce everything else. You can't ever say the idea is wrong. So if you come along with a load of facts and you say, well, this idea is wrong because here are the facts, here is the evidence that shows it's wrong, well, the ideology says you must be wrong. There can be no challenge to the ideology. And so you have to be stopped, you have to be suppressed, because the ideology of liberalism is that it's bound up with the betterment of humanity, the perfection of the world. So anyone who stands against that isn't just wrong, they're actually evil. And if they're evil, they have to be stopped. And so you have this phenomenon in which we have people who purport to be liberal who are stamping out free expression on our campuses, preventing people from speaking, which is absolutely the absolute antithesis of true liberal values. And that's the paradox of liberalism. It's become an illiberal ideology.
Something to think about. You could agree or disagree, but we should hear these words. Because right now, everywhere, there is the mob believing that they are right because they are representing the liberal dictates. And now it's hardened itself. It's codified into a set of actions where you can't say certain words. If you do not agree with them, then you're the enemy. You're wrong. And therefore, you lose your sacredness. You lose the respect of being a dignified person with a different point of view, which historically we thrived on debate. We thrived on having exchanges of ideas. Not today. No, they will erase you and are. Some of the greatest minds in America. Chris Hedges is one example. Abby Martin is another one. Glenn Ford, another one from Black Agenda Report. Erased. You can't find him on Google searches. So the consequences are what people are not aware of yet, because we haven't seen the bigger picture. It's coming, because once you allow that to happen, you can't put it back in the box. What are your thoughts on this? That those who are pronounced as the ultimate liberals have no tolerance for anyone else, and no matter what truth it is. Now, if we have time today, I'll show you an example of that. And for example, I posted up on PRN.fm under video bios, age is not a death sentence. This is 2 hours and 54 minutes long. But why you all should watch this and share it with everyone is because Wikipedia says, oh, Gary Noll, and by the way, they put it up there. I didn't, my biography. He's into AIDS denialism. This shows you everything they said is a lie. Now, we're going to adjudicate that. In fact, I'm hiring new lawyers, by the way, people who have experience in trial lawyers, because we have a team of lawyers working and our case is ready. In one more week, it'll be ready 100%, and then we launch. But I'm going to hire some really smart lawyers for inside the courtroom. So you can contact our prnstudio@gmail.com if you're interested. In any case, in this documentary, you will see top journalists, Tony Brown, multi-Emmy award-winning reporter like Bill McCrary. You'll see Bill Tatum, publisher of the Amsterdam News, newspaper for African-Americans in America, a highly respected attorney and journalist, Doug Henderson. You have Earl Caldwell. You have all these great people who, independent one to another, found that I had cured, not just helped, cured 15 people, meaning they had all the full-blown disease of AIDS over 16-month average period. They all reversed all symptoms, plus they went from HIV positive to negative, and they stayed healthy. We had all the blood chemistries to prove it. So we had science. We had medical science. We had the nurses, the staff, the dietitians, everyone gave testimony to that, and there are the records to prove it. That's proof. That's prima facie evidence. They wouldn't look at it. The media wouldn't touch that. We let all of them know. 1,200 people that I was seeing were treated using complementary and holistic protocols. Over 15 years, not one died. Do you know of any other place in the world where 1,200 people were treated for full-blown AIDS, not just HIV infected, but otherwise asymptomatic, but full-blown AIDS, no one died? No. And we had a press conference. No media came. They were invited. We had an all-day conference that many of you, thousands of you, attended from noon till 11 o'clock at night. There you see it. We have it in the film. You see all the thousands of people. You see a whole panel I brought in from all over the world treating AIDS naturally. No media showed up. No media covered. 3 days at the Apollo Theater. It would have been 5 days at the Apollo Theater for 3 hours. All these African-American physicians coming up on stage before I lectured each time, talking about how they'd use the protocol in reverse AIDS conditions. Not a single mention. You don't have that kind of news blackout. You don't have that unless you have intent and people behind it. Why? Because I don't promote AZT. It killed, I believe, at least 250,000 people, and that's thanks to Anthony Fauci. And he's the same guy around today lying about and giving some misinformation on hydroxychloroquine and other ways of looking at COVID-19. So there's an example where a belief in something became more important than the truth of something. The truth and facts supporting the truth and the science supporting the facts were all negated so that ideology would reign. And every journalist, including the leading gay journalist, Charles Ortley, Nina Ostrom, and at least 20 others that I knew and interviewed, they were all destroyed because they wouldn't get in alignment with one virus causing 30 conditions and only one treatment, the antiretrovirals. So that's just one example I can share with you. But download Age is Not a Death Sentence today. Watch it and share it with everyone. Now, call in 888-874-4888 if you'd like to share your thoughts on that. And then we're going to go to another clip. Now, maybe you didn't hear this book, but if you did, wow, we got to put that book right up there beside White Fragility. Is just a remarkably controversial book that could lead people in the wrong direction. We're going to have a short interview on this one. Please listen in.
Good evening. I'm Dan Senor, filling in for Charlie Rose. Last Thursday, Middlebury College experienced a scene that's becoming increasingly familiar. Dr. Charles Murray, a scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, was invited to speak. A massive protest greeted him. The intent was not to simply express peaceful dissent, but to shut down his speech. Dr. Murray and the Middlebury professor who interviewed him ran into a mob of protesters, several of whom physically assaulted Dr. Murray's interviewer and forced her to the hospital. The incident and others like it bring into sharp relief a growing tendency on American campuses, an intolerance for freedom of speech and a challenge to intellectual diversity.
Okay. Now that is going on everywhere. And Jonathan Haidt was the guest for this. That's just the introduction. But I'll give you an example. When there was right up a week before the vote in California, should vaccines allow exemptions, religious exemptions, philosophical exemptions, and Dr. Pan and all these other legislators who had received huge amounts of money collectively from the makers of these vaccines that were going to be mandated, like Gardasil, and the other vaccines that we had written multiple articles showing the lack of safety in them, like the measles, mumps, and rubella, the MMR. I was invited by Bonnie Faulkner, an outstanding journalist and broadcaster, to do a 1-hour broadcast on KPFA in Berkeley, one of the five Pacifica stations, where I was going to challenge the idea that vaccines that they were mandating were safe and effective. I could prove with the peer review literature none were. And I could prove they were extremely dangerous. I had all the evidence. Plus, I had a list of how much money each legislator had received who had already voted yes on the legislation. This was our last effort, and it was very close. And this would have hit the area of highly educated people who would have known that there's a second opinion on the issue. We were censored. We were banned on free speech. Liberal radio, KPFA. What hypocrisy. Utter, complete hypocrisy. But this is exactly what we're talking about. So if the so-called liberals and don't want to hear what you have to say because you don't align with their feelings, then you're banned. Well, then where's freedom of speech? Where does the individual and their rights and freedoms to exist and to share their thoughts come from? It's only the groupthink. The group think that then uses its power as a sledgehammer. Now let's hear from another person about looting should be legal and good, and it's promoted. And you're kidding. No, looting is good. Okay, I'll share a few of my thoughts, not like your thoughts. Maybe you agree, maybe you disagree. Now to that interview. It's short. It's only 4 minutes long.
What are your thoughts on looting as a method of hastening change?
I'm mainly against it.
Are you ever for it?
No, not I can think of. You're referring, I assume, among other things, to the book that's just been published in America, In Defense of Looting.
2016 that came out, you know.
Did it really? Gosh, that was
which
a prophetic
book. Which is really, really interesting. So yeah.
It's had its moment now, that book, hasn't it?
She is so much more insightful than you. Her ability to see what's going on in the future is that much greater than yours.
Yeah.
So Vicky Osterweil, for anyone who doesn't know what it is, I've got a little breakdown here and then I'll get your opinions on it. So NPR summarizes the book as an argument that, quote, looting is a powerful tool to bring about real lasting change in society, end quote. Osterweil's argument is simple. The so-called United States was founded in, quote, cis-hetero-patriarchal racial capitalist violence. That violence produced our current system, particularly its property relations, and looting is a remedy for that sickness. Looting rejects the legitimacy of ownership rights and property, the moral injunction to work for a living, and the justice of law and order. Ownership of things, not just people, is innately structurally white supremacist. Looting is good, she says, because it exposes a deep truth about the great American confidence game, which is that, without, quote, without police and without state oppression, we can have things for free. She came to this conclusion 6 years ago, and in her book, which is written in love and solidarity with looters the world over.
Well, the obvious question is, where does she live? Anything you need to know?
Do you know that at the front of the book, they have the classic, this is copyrighted by whatever
yes,
publishing.
I know because a colleague of mine at The Spectator wrote to her publishers the other day saying, we are publishing our own edition of this.
Looting her book.
You were just looting her book. And the publishers didn't seem to be up for that. You'd be amazed to hear. But, I mean, I just said, look, if you see it in the bookshop, take it. It's yours. All property is theft. Why not? Turns out, actually, nobody wants to steal her book. Certainly not if it's filled with stuff like you just read. These people, I mean, they're so reprehensible on so many levels. I mean, first of all, by the way, how ignorant can somebody be? I mean, how ignorant do you have to be to make that claim about the foundation of American society? And I suspect, like a number of authors of the American far left, she's never been anywhere else in the world in her life. I strongly suspect that. If she can send me photos of herself in sub-Saharan Africa, North Africa, across a lot of the Middle East and the Far East and things, I could be persuaded. But I would suspect that she's been brought up in America, hasn't traveled very much further, and has simply been indoctrinated in this now completely boring and predictable way where all you need to do is throw out this same word salad about heteronormativity and indigenous people and all this sort of thing. And before you know it, you've got to. It's amazing we're in this era and that people are talking and thinking like this. I simply think she is a product of capitalism at this particular stage where she doesn't know very much. She hasn't been very far in the world. She's not been educated well. She's not seen anything of the world. She doesn't know anything about life. She doesn't know how life is normally run. And all of that is playing out on the streets of various American cities at the moment, primarily Portland, Oregon. But there are a lot of people in this strange position.
Okay, that's a whole new thing that is running across America now, that not only is it you have an obligation to loot, you have an obligation to take what is someone else's because it shouldn't belong to anybody. A year ago, there was a television interview. It might have been on 60 Minutes, one of the programs, and I saw part of it, so I didn't see the beginning. But there was an interview with a person that owns a business in San Francisco. And this was before COVID. This was where the streets were filled with drug addicts. And a drug addict needs help. Leaving a drug addict on the street who may also have mental conditions and not being given some kind of input that would help them get over their addiction is not good for society, nor need to say the individual. But it was just thousands of these people. And the mayor and the city council changed the laws because they were urinating, defecating everywhere right on the streets. But then you're not going to see people arrested out in San Francisco for shoplifting. And as a result, People can come in a store, take what they want, and leave. You can't touch them. You can't physically stop them. And so a man said, what am I going to do? You know, I can't afford to let people just take everything they want. I'll be out of business. I have rent. Didn't matter. That's the new norm. Now, let's just take what this person was advocating in this kind of neo-Marxist philosophy, which is even a hybrid of communism, that nothing belongs to the individual, nothing, and that you shouldn't have to work to make a living. Whatever you need should be provided by the state. By that very notion, legitimizing anything that is taken, imagine if someone went into a hospital, into surgery, and stole all, or just took all the equipment that was needed to perform resuscitation, to save people's lives for surgery. I also imagine that they went into car dealerships and they just took the cars. Don't belong to you. Belongs to us because we're righting a wrong. Imagine if they went into all the food stores and took all the food, all of it they could take, and where there was no food left for anyone to have or buy. Just imagine the consequence if they went into every clothing store, jewelry store, every store, and just looted everything that there was that had previously been for sale. And said, we're justified in doing it. This is a form, but only a tiny fraction. If we stole everything in America off every window and out of every home, and then they said, yeah, that's an idea. Your home doesn't belong to you, so we're going into your home. We're going to take your bed, your refrigerator. Even if you're a single person living alone on Social Security, we want what's in your refrigerator. It doesn't belong to you, old person. Besides, you're near death, so what do you care? And think of how far an ideology and the consequences go once you open that door, that nothing belongs to the individual, no matter what historically had been done to earn that legitimately without harming another person, without engaging any kind of misogynist or racist or any other ideology. You simply lived by the basic moral values of your community and your family. Imagine what would happen if you decide, we're going to loot the synagogue. We're going to get in there and take those old scrolls because they don't belong to them. They belong to us. How do you think that's going to go? Huh? How do you think it would go? What would happen if people came to your house, your apartment, said, we're taking everything here. We're looting it because it doesn't belong to you. And yet this was a book that has gained resurgence, just like White Fragility. This is where we're going now. And those who are not aware of it, they've got a problem. I'm going to hold off my final audio clip here because we have Sonia from the Bronx on. Hi, Sonia. Your turn. Your thoughts, please.
Thank you for your wonderful programs. I think what's happening with this whole debacle that's going on in our society and culture is it's being orchestrated. It's a matter of conquer and divide. Everything that's happening at the local level is not happening in the homes or the areas where the rich people, the people in power live. That's never going to happen there. So we are being conditioned to behave like this, to treat each other this way. The disrespect, the refusal to listen, merely to listen, to treat people like human beings and give people a chance to understand a better way to live together. And this is all being orchestrated through the media, through, you know, the corporations, and we're just buying into this. But at the very end, we will be left imprisoned in our own madness, in our own hatred of each other, while the people in power are going to continue living their lovely, beautiful lives at our expense. And people who don't wake up to this are to blame. We don't have to live this way. There is absolutely no reason to live this way. It's going to destroy all of us.
Well, Sonia, let's focus on... Thank you for your thoughts. They're extremely pertinent. You do not see the people who say looting is right going down and looting the billionaire building that the Koch brothers live in, or all the hedge fund liver. You don't see them going up to Greenwich, Connecticut, or out to Long Island to loot, let's say, the former mayor of New York and the publisher of Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg's estates. You don't see them going out in Seattle and going on to Bill Melissa's estate, which is heavily guarded with lots of armed security and looting. What if they went in and started to loot all the television stations? What if they went to WBAI and says, this radio station doesn't belong to BAI or the Pacifica Foundation. It belongs to we. So we're taking your microphones, we're taking your Comrex, we're taking everything in here. And they took it. What then would you do if that became the accepted order? So what I'm suggesting is, once you allow this type of behavior to be normalized, then as you suggest, Sonia, then divisiveness becomes the rule of the day. You don't look at what we have in common, that we could build a better future, correct the imbalances that do exist, and exceed the limitations that we've been fraught with, but instead we break through and harmonize by having education that is free and quality education based upon a meritocracy and discipline to come to school, come to a learning institution because you really want to learn and are not afraid of critical thought, where we don't have poverty because we are not allowing income inequality to exist in the first place. If there's to be capitalism, it would be a humanitarian form of capitalism, not the vulture capitalism, predatory capitalism that exists now. And we could do the same thing when it comes to helping the senior citizens, reintegrate them into the lives of younger people with cot lines, where people at home who have retired can, based upon their specialization, what they did in their career and what they feel comfortable talking about, can answer people's questions based upon that lifelong wisdom that they've have gained, and look at how we can benefit from that. That's what happens when you don't look at a person's color of their skin, you don't look at their religion, you don't look at their height, their weight, their ethnicity. All that is irrelevant. The fact is, we're human beings, we're sacred souls. And that brings us all together. Now, how we want to separate ourselves is up to our cultural differences, which we can share. Right now, the new thing is you cannot eat Mexican food unless you're Mexican. You can't buy, you can't buy a Swiss watch unless you're from a Swiss citizen. You can't have an Italian-made dress or shirt or suit unless you're from Italy. This is how insane it is. And yet people think that this is it. The new concept from this one person who appears in television all over the place is that you can't touch your baby, not even change his diapers, unless you get the baby's permission. Believe it or not, I actually heard her say that. You can't, and the same person said that you can't, with your loved one, your spouse or your partner, you can't touch their hand, you can't hold their hand, you can't hug them, you can't cuddle if you're sleeping at night unless you first get their permission, because otherwise it's a violation, it's an attack upon the sanctity of their body. This is how insane it's got. So until we understand how bad it is, including those who are the outliers, those who are not at the core of this, and this is starting in the college campuses, and teacher, professor after professor after professor who's smart enough to know better has acquiesced so they don't get shamed and they don't get a Title IX complaint anonymously filed against them. So the most culpable, the weakest people are academics, because they're not living in the real world. They don't understand what it is to be a part of the real world. They're the ones who are giving power to this insane movement. So I thank Jonathan Haidt and others who are standing up to it. Thank you very much, Sonia. I appreciate your input. I'm going to save the next clip for tomorrow because it's a really heavy clip with Jonathan Haidt. Instead, I'm going to share with you a original investigative report that should have importance for all of us. It is entitled The Unfounded Science Behind the COVID-19 Pandemic. Richard Gale and myself have done all the research on this. And it's there as a tool. It's a call to action. Use our material, because you could use this in a court of law. You could use this as a petition to get an exemption. The COVID-19 pandemic, as we all know, has tossed our society into a quandary. The public is baffled over who to trust. Should we believe the only accurate and honest scientific data about the virus and policy measures to lessen its spread is the proprietary information produced by Anthony Fauci, the CDC, and the institutions these federal agencies fund and cooperate with? Or are we to believe the mob of officials aligned with Trump, or wealthy moguls such as Bill Gates, who believe they possess all the answers money can buy and are on a destined mission to cure the planet. Are any of these ministries of truth being sincere and forthright in their pronouncements? No. Barely a day passes without a news update about one of the 300-plus coronavirus vaccines currently in development. Unfortunately, the vaccine makers share very little of the actual data from their clinical trials that is sufficient for independent review. So far, it has been a completely non-transparent effort, and only cherry-picked information trickles to the media and to our attention. Worse, several of these vaccines have been fast-tracked through the government's regulatory agencies based upon unsound science that they will curtail the virus's spread. Yet haven't we heard this before? It is repeated annually at the start of every flu season. You've heard it. I've heard it. Massive vaccination campaigns at exorbitant taxpayer costs, and they've done absolutely nothing, zero, to curb influenza rates from one year to the next. But that's fine. There's still enormous profits at stake. So if we're not eliminating and protecting ourselves from influenza, we're certainly making a lot of money for the people who are telling us that's how it's done. It's good for the economy and terrible for our health. Therefore, the launch of a coronavirus vaccine will be a golden trophy for the winning drug maker, a bonanza of windfall profits. And the mainstream media fully supports this scheme. It is fully complicit without making any effort whatsoever to seek outside the federal health regime's second professional medical opinions. Until we can all be injected, we are in the game of follow the leader. And should it be the U.S.? I think not. With the most dismal record in the developed world for diagnosing and treating patient infections, we dictate to the international community, and we are not ones to dictate anything. We should be looking maybe at South Korea, Sweden, Taiwan, or Vietnam, who seemingly have been the most successful in keeping deaths per capita of infection at the lowest levels while also keeping their economies and societies functioning. Scientists were still frantically trying to discover the unique properties of the virus, which was also mutating in the course of their research. The World Health Organization kept changing its story and is also not to be believed or trusted. The U.S. policies of draconian lockdowns and widespread school and store closures mandated for mass and social distancing are now showing all the signs of being a horrible miscalculation and a complete and total failure. We've witnessed the highest deaths among the elderly confined to quarantining in nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and hospice care. Investigative reports have identified a scandal of death due to other medical conditions being ruled as COVID deaths when they're not. Unlike East Asian countries, the U.S. didn't begin to act diligently until long after the virus started to spread on our shores. Nor was the U.S. prepared for any pandemic, whereas Taiwan, Japan, and South Korea's health ministries, they started to prepare 20 years ago when the first SARS outbreak began. As the vaccine race is underway, the only uncertainty being the timeline for launch, we are faced with another critical issue that miraculously does not enter the public narrative. None of the diagnostic tests for COVID-19 accurately qualify as a gold standard. The polymerase chain reaction test, or the PCR, is currently the standard test. However, it is unable to precisely determine whether a person is infectious with COVID-19, nor can it accurately measure viral load. This is the test now being relied upon to calculate the country's infectious rates. So guess who's going to be the first people mandated to get the vaccine? Those who've tested positive for the coronavirus. We only need to read the FDA diagnostic document. I did. Here it is. Quote, the CDC COVID-19 novel corona diagnostic panel. The COVID-19 RNA is generally detectable in upper and lower respiratory specimens during infection. Positive results are indicative of actual infection with COVID-19, quote, but do not rule out bacterial infection or co-infection of other viruses. The agent detected may not be the definitive cause of the disease. Negative results do not preclude COVID-19 infection. It should not be used as the sole basis for treatment or other patient management decisions. End quote. Yes, that's exactly what's happening. In an article in the journal Science commemorating the invention of PCR, the authors state the fundamental drawback of the technology as a diagnostic tool. Quote, PCR is exquisitely sensitive and specific for detecting nucleic acid sequences, but simply knowing that a particular DNA or RNA sequence is present doesn't prove it's associated with a live organism. Quote, doesn't prove it's associated with a live organism. Quote, does not prove it is associated with a live organism. And yet every single person in every single place in the world who gets a positive COVID, even though they could be an athlete, total health, they will be called COVID positive. The authors further go on to explain that that is the reason why the food industry PCR is not used for assuring food safety, and instead it relies upon culture assays, which are more accurate and definitive. Can the problems with PCR for diagnosing COVID-19 therefore be any clearer? Dr. Beda Stadler, the former director of the Institute of Immunology at the University of Bern in Switzerland, further adds to the flaws of the PCR that everyone's taking, you're taking. Quote, so if we do a PCR corona test on an immune person, it is not a virus that is detected, but a small, shattered part of the viral genome. The test comes back positive for as long as there is any tiny shattered parts of the virus left, even if the infectious viruses are long gone, long dead. A corona test can come back positive because the PCR method multiplies even a tiny fraction of the viral genetic material enough to be detected. So you could have had a viral test from 20 years ago, or you could have had a virus 20 years ago, you had a flu 20 years ago, a cold 20 years ago, and you can test positive today, and they'll say, ah, you have the coronavirus today. No, that is not true. PCR is simply a technology used for manufacturing DNA. It is based upon principle of running cycles that increasingly reproduce, magnify, over and over again. A tiny, tiny little fraction can be magnified 50 times. And so then it's shown that you're positive. But there's no standard for the number of cycles required to confirm positive diagnosis. According to David Crow, the late president of think tank Rethinking AIDS, if you cut off 20 cycles, meaning they've amplified it 20 times, everybody would be negative. If you cut off at 50 cycles, everybody would be positive. That's how insanely unscientific this is. It is therefore easy to recognize how PCR is an ideal technology to advance propaganda. At present, most PCR testing in the United States is running between 35 and 40 cycles. Hence, the high rate of COVID-19 cases in the United States compared to any other country using PCR at 30 cycles or less and reporting less cases. The FDA does not provide any cycle specifications for confirming a positive sample. Dr. Juliet Morrison, a virologist at the University of California at Riverside, quote, I'm shocked that people would think that 40 cycles could represent a positive, end quote. Dr. Michael Mina, an epidemiologist at Harvard School of Public Health, recommends 30 cycles or less. During an interview with medical journalist Celia Farber, Dr. David Raznick, a biochemist and founder of the Viral Forensics Laboratory and a former researcher at the University of California, Berkeley's Retroviral Lab, expresses reservations for relying on PCR for viral diagnostics. Quote, you don't start with testing. You start with listening to the lungs. I'm skeptical that a PCR test is ever true. It's a great scientific research tool. It's a horrible tool for clinical medicine. 30% of your infected cells have been killed before you show symptoms. This means that your body's innate immune system is already killing pathogens. He further warns people to avoid being tested with PCR. Quote, no healthy person should be tested. It means nothing, but it can destroy your life, make you absolutely miserable. Why? Because of the consequences. Oh, you mean you're positive? Then we've got to track you and everyone you come into contact with, and we've got to quarantine you. And finally, some are taking notice of our national failure to accurately monitor the spread of the virus infectious rates, which is far less and doesn't warrant the drastic regulations being enacted. New York Times reported, quote, in three sets of testing data that included PCR cycle thresholds compiled by Massachusetts, New York, and Nevada, up to 90% of people testing positive carried barely any virus, end quote. In other words, these individuals cannot be primary spreaders. Earlier this month, Massachusetts Department of Public Health had to suspend further testing for COVID-19 at a Boston laboratory because of an unusually high rate of false positive tests being reported. Sadly, the labs serve about 16 nursing homes with residents in poor health and already in quarantine. We must ask now how many of those states' elderly died due to the unnecessary invasive therapies and drugs for an infection they never had. However, Anthony Fauci is determined to convince the nation and the medical community that PCR is the best route for monitoring the pandemic and for opening up the economy. The media is intentionally conflating two different and distinct statistics: the number of people testing positive, even though it is demonstrated they have no viral activity and hence pose no threat to others or themselves, versus those who test positive and are actual carriers and potential spreaders. These are different demographics. For example, if you test 1,000 senior citizens 75 years and older, and they test positive and also have one or more comorbidities, then indeed they are at risk of dying through a combination of virus and their existing illness. But the media has us believing that anybody testing positive is equally subject to being sick and die. This is a flagrant abuse of medical knowledge. PCR was invented 37 years ago, hence it has been in use for a long time. PCR flaws are well known, yet this technology that was never designed for diagnosing any pathogen is theoretically controlling our lives. In conclusion, with the presidential election upon us, both parties are making efforts to weaponize the pandemic for their own political advantages. It is feasible that before mandating a COVID-19 vaccine, PCR testing will first be mandated by everyone, or for everyone. Can we pause for a moment before charging forward with further draconian policies and laws that will inflict more harm and cause more deaths? Sadly, we cannot stop this. There is no power that can stop the mad rush for a vaccine and the litany of false promises that will surely be spewed across the mainstream media after it's available. America is systematically greedy. Washington, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, and Wall Street are not run by any ethical standard. Their neoliberal ideology, growth and profit alone, is intrinsically amoral. Greed is the one and only virus that we can be certain is woven into our national DNA. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.
Hello, darkness, my old friend. I've come to talk with you again. Because a vision softly